Island. You're listening to DDI on Autism on 103.9 FM, keeping an eye on autism and giving a voice to its Long Island community. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas. Continue my conversation with Benjamin Boudreau and David Geslick, two guys who are very invested in the issue of exercise, the challenge of exercise, as it relates to people on the autism spectrum. You know, Benjamin, I want to continue our conversation around screen time, the adverse impact of too much screen time, not only among people on the spectrum, but just about everybody today. You know, we're either in front of an iPad or maybe an Apple Watch, or it used to be just television, but we're always looking at some kind of a screen. And I know you've identified, as part of your research interests, the problem around doing a little bit too much of that. And let's talk a little bit about that. What do you see as the challenge or the problem around too much screen time?
Well, it's very complicated. So usually we have a 24-hour, you know, in a day, 24 hours in a day. And usually, you know, we factor in, okay, I'm going to be going to work, I'll be going exercise or sit down and watch TV. Well, looking at screen time as a matter of just saying, you know, too much screen time can cause mental disturbance or sleep issues, it's very complicated. So we know that, you know, too much is bad, but okay, well, say I went exercise for an hour. Well, and then I'm on my phone for like, you know, 4 hours a day. Well, how much of that time are you on your phone? Are you sitting down more? Are you walking while on the phone? So it alternates this 24-hour activity cycle and looking at, you know, how it can impact your sleep. And we know that physical activity and sleep is interrelated heavily. And then if you're sedentary a lot, you're known to have sleep problems. So, and then that can lead to mental problems. So tying in and control understanding of how all these can interrelate one another is very difficult. And, you know, the other thing I always stress is it's not just the amount of time you're on the phone. It's also what are you doing on the phone? So, or tablet or whatever, meaning I could be on Facebook, have a friend just posted her cat, new cat, and you'll give me a smile. But then the next page, I'll see, 2,000 cases reported today of the virus. So, you know, it could change your mood fluctually real quick. So learning about that angle can help. And I always tell people is, you know, if you can at least get 30 minutes a day of exercise to rotate this 30-minute clock and to limit your screen time, it can actually help.
That makes good sense to me, Benjamin. It really does. And certainly your thoughts about the 24-hour cycle and how that might, how much too much screen time could interrupt that circadian rhythm and make a real difference. But let me ask you, would you agree that certainly it affects, certainly what you're doing, as you describe it, during that screen time would be important to know more about. But I just wonder, would you agree that it's also what you're not doing during all that time? And when I think of people on the spectrum who maybe are not having the opportunity to kind of cultivate more in the way of social comfort and social skills, there's a little piece of that, I imagine, on screen time, but there's no substitute, I suppose, for some in-person socialization.
Yeah, and I have noticed that. Like this past weekend, I had someone that looked like they were on the spectrum. I asked my friend because she was a psychiatrist, and, you know, the one thing we typically notice is here's phone, here's wherever. It's like a babysitter. So it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to be bothered by this, but I always tell parents is, you know, educate yourself. You know, guidelines show for kids, like for screen time, that if you're 0 to 1 year old, you're not supposed to be engaging in any screen time whatsoever.
Right.
If you're about 2 to 4, then you're about an hour per day. But then the thing people don't realize is, okay, I'm on an iPhone or whatever. Well, we're forgetting one big screen at the end of the day, and that's our TV. So, and that's usually known as a traditional sedentary behavior. So like smartphone use is more dynamic because I could walk while I'm doing it. I could be standing, I could be laying in bed. So it, you know, it, I think we need to get learning more of like, you know, what they're doing, how much time, and adjusting and accounting for all these behaviors. And I think, you know, getting away from it is beneficial to anyone, whether they're on the spectrum or not.
And I think what you just said, Benjamin, is affirmed by, even by some, ironically, by the way, some of the principals at Google, who are principal executives, who are prohibiting their own children from spending any significant time in screen time. So that definitely seems to be affirmed. You know, David, I want to go to you for a second. In an earlier segment, we talked about your role as the founder of Exercise Connection and Exercise Buddy, but we really didn't describe what those are. What is first, let's start with Exercise Connection. What is that?
Sure. So we create and design exercise programs, obviously, for individuals, one-on-one, small groups. That's really how the company got started. And then it expanded to, I started lecturing and, you know, presenting at autism conferences and educating truly the group that I wanted to educate about exercise was parents. But then that grew to adapted and physical educators. And now I've been to 7 different countries, Egypt, Dubai, Barbados, Canada, Russia, South Korea, Kazakhstan, of all places, to help.
Yeah.
And then Exercise Buddy, it's an app. And we created that. It now has 5 independent research studies that support it. It embeds 5 evidence-based practices as well. And we have users across the world. I think we need to get in the hands of many more, and that's our goal.
Yep.
But essentially, it's providing, you know, that visual support and that technology that can definitely help more individuals on the spectrum. But I always am quick to remind parents or professionals that this is not going to solve the problem for every individual with autism. We know that technology can be a major distraction. But it's gaining worldwide interest. We have, like I said, the university support. So, yeah, we're just continuing to get it out there and help more students and more professionals essentially be able to have another tool in their toolbox to help these kids move and exercise.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad that you mentioned the global outreach. You know, it certainly underscores the need and also kind of a shared human need. That's there's nothing particularly not unusual, but there's not specific to anybody in this particular country. This transcends, you know, all borders. Of course it does. It also resonates with me, you know, as a representative of DDI, because we've gone across our borders to share applied behavior analysis, some of the most critical tools of our field. So there is an ethical imperative to take good stuff and go a little bit further with it when we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to think a little bit too about the kind of exercise that can be effective or personal. I know, Benjamin, you had mentioned earlier that you prefer individual exercise rather than group or maybe sports or sports. Why is that? What is it about individual exercise that appeals to you?
Oh, I think it's because, you know, like everyone like feels like more individual. Like I like to be going at my own pace. I always say, you know, people strive like you need to be first. You need to be this. Well, I always say, well, try and be the best you can. And then the reward will come later on. And usually it does because like, look, for instance, my last half marathon was at 1 hour and 38 minutes.
Wow.
And then the year before was like 1 hour and 45. So I try and set, once I start setting goals for myself, you know, rather than have a coach telling me, hey, you need to do this. Well, you know, sometimes because it's, you know, I'm an exercise physiologist. So it's kind of like, well, I might have a disagreement already, like what the coach might want out of me versus I might want this. So it could be different.
You know, that kind of circles back to really where you started, where some of the benefits of exercise, as you describe them for you, was benefits in terms of sleep, in terms of reduction of anxiety, for sure, and also increased self-esteem. So part of that may be tied to this idea of setting personal goals and then meeting them. And it, as you suggest, it allows you to go at a pace that feels right. You know, we only have a little while, but I would be remiss, David, if I didn't ask you if there is a fundamental difference around your approach to people on the spectrum and neurotypical individuals.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things that I always like to remind parents is many things, and professionals, many things that sport is the only way that these that we can exercise ourselves. And sports involve two of the biggest challenges that we know for those with autism: social skills and communication. So for many children, you're putting them in a situation that could, you're setting them up for failure. So
I would ask you to hold that, David, and bring you back again. We are afraid the clock has ticked, but okay. Thank you for some unbelievably valuable information. I'm going to ask you both to come back. I'm going to bring you back and we'll follow up. Okay. All right. Thank you, guys. You're listening to DDI on Autism on 103.9 FM.
The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.